ever tried watching your athlete's game from anywhere in the world? With Replayer, you actually can. I had a friend watch his son's game live from his flight. My son watched a live game from the car while we were driving up the California coast. It doesn't matter where you are, grandparents across the country, cousins on the other side of the world, teammates who just moved away, set up the camera, hit go live, and everyone with a link is right there on the sideline. Live streaming is free. Unlimited games, unlimited teams, unlimited users. No complex tiers. Everyone gets access. And forget waiting hours for footage. I recorded a 60-minute game, and it was ready in 5 minutes. Players were clipping highlights on the ride home. One camera, made in the USA, unlimited everything. If you never want to miss those moments, head to replayer.com. The link is in the show notes. Hey soccer friends, I just want to give a shout out to our partner, TeamPlayer. They are changing the game on how you find the perfect soccer team for your player. Parents, this means no more endless social media scrolling to find information on teams. With TeamPlayer, everything you need to know is just a few clicks away. It's simple, straightforward, and lets you find the best coach and team for your player without any of the usual headaches. And coaches, we all know how tough it can be to get your team noticed, but when you subscribe to one of TeamPlayer's team plans, you instantly get access to set up an online team profile that allows you to reach more potential players and showcase what your team is all about. It's super easy and lets players and parents see why your team could be the right fit for them. And if you sign up using the promo code PITCH, you can try any team plan free for 1 month. So whether you're managing a team or searching for one, come on over to www.teamplayer.us. That is TeamPlayer.us. And come give TeamPlayer a look.
Family-owned Soccer Innovation is your go-to source for top-quality equipment. Whether you're a player, a supportive family member, or a dedicated coach, they have everything you need to elevate your game. For players, their innovative equipment are designed to boost your skills and performance on the pitch. From their agility cones to their portable goals, they have you covered. And family members, they offer durable equipment that's built to last because we know your support is critical to your player. Coaches, trust me, they can provide the equipment you need to run effective training sessions and shape the next generation of soccer players. Visit Soccer Innovations at soccerinnovations.com to start elevating your game with them.
And if you use the code PITCH, P-I-T-C-H, you can receive up to 10% off your next order. This week, I had the pleasure of interviewing Derek Waldeck, USL League One player for Greenville Triumph. Please join me by the pitch to listen to Derek's story and his journey through soccer.
Well, my name is Derek Waldeck. I am a professional soccer player. I'm currently playing for the Greenville Triumph in Greenville, South Carolina, in USL League One. I'm sure we'll be able to jump a little more into my story, but that is currently where I'm at.
So can you give me where your soccer journey begins? So did you start off always playing soccer, or did you switch sports, or?
Yeah, I've actually played soccer my whole life, pretty much. I was thrown in at probably 4, maybe 5 years old, whatever the youngest age was at the time that I could jump in to play recreational soccer. I got signed up for a team and, you know, just played for the fun of it as a young kid, would practice maybe once or twice a week and have a game on Saturday morning. And that was about that. But I fell in love with the game at a very young age. And I loved being outside, getting to kick a ball around, playing with friends, playing with my three brothers. And so I did play some other sports growing up, but soccer kind of always seemed to be the one that I got the most excited about. So it was very easy to dedicate lots of my time because I simply loved playing the game.
So you said your brother. So do you come from a soccer family then, or was soccer just a luck of the draw for you?
I would say I come from a sports family more so than just a soccer family. My dad played just about every sport growing up. My mom was a multi-sport athlete as well. Both of them competed through high school, and then in college just did intramurals and stuff like that. So neither one of them competed at the collegiate level, but they both grew up in families that loved basketball, loved soccer, loved volleyball, cross country, any sport you can imagine, really, outside of baseball and football. I feel like they came from those kinds of backgrounds, and that's what they loved and enjoyed doing. And, you know, kind of instilled that in our family as well, that we love getting to be outside. We love physical activity and getting to compete.
Pretty cool. Okay. So did you start off in rec and move yourself through rec, or were you, I don't know how it was when you were growing up. I mean, club is very common today, and they start as young as 4.
So, right.
Did you play at a rec level, or did you play at a club level starting off, or something like I-9 or
along? Yeah, so I actually played recreationally. I didn't play for an official club team until I was 13 years old. And I can get into that a little bit. That came in part with a move from the Northwest, where I grew up in Central Washington, down to Southern California, just outside of LA. And once I was living in LA, that's when I joined my first official club team, because we didn't have club soccer in the small town that I lived in prior in Central Washington. So I played recreationally in just our local rec soccer league. It's very similar to an AYSO, I-9, probably those types of leagues. I know it varies based on where you are in the country, but I played recreationally until probably the time that I was 9, maybe 10. And I think I continued to play recreationally in the fall, but then in the spring and summer, probably around the time I was 9 or 10, I started joining my older brother, who's 2 years above me. He and some of the soccer players in his class in our town started competing in select tournaments and stuff like that. So we weren't a recognized club. It was more just kind of, these are the kids from the town we can pull together, and we'll submit the team into a few tournaments every summer to get to go play. So that was the first sniff at competitive soccer that I got, really. We also, I think when I was 10 years old, played in a summer Mexican league that was going on in our area in Central Washington. And so that would involve a little bit of traveling, just 30 minutes to an hour away to neighboring cities here and there. So those were kind of the first two tastes of competitive soccer that I got. And then, like I had mentioned, it wasn't until I was 13 years old that my family and I moved down to LA for my dad's work. And a few months after we had moved down to LA, I got plugged in with a local club team there. And that was the first time that I actually played for a recognized club.
That's pretty cool. So you said you played with your brother 2 years older. So was majority of the team 2 years older, and were you guys playing at their age level, or?
Yeah. So at the time, I think it was probably 2 or 3 years that I spent playing up with my older brother, and a lot of the kids on the team were his age. I think occasionally for some tournaments, we would play up an additional year. So I'm a 98 birth year. So a lot of the kids on that team were 96s. But occasionally we would jump a year above and play in tournaments with 95s and stuff like that. So that honestly taught me a lot about the game, being a younger, less physical, less athletic player compared, you know, when you're 10 years old versus playing against 12 and 13 year olds, there is a pretty big gap there. And so it kind of taught me different ways to be smarter about the game and to read the game, since I didn't have the physical ability that I did when I played with my own age group, where I could run past kids or use my athleticism or speed to beat kids. I had to learn to read the game and just become smarter and understand timing and angles and some of those small things that you get exposed for if you're not able to read those when you're a smaller kid on the field who isn't quite as athletic. So I think I grew a lot by getting to play up with my older brother, and that kind of helped. That was part of my development, absolutely.
Pretty cool. So my brain's turning now, because I didn't know this. So like, I did some research, to be honest. And so playing with them, so this is, did you play an offense or a defensive role, or were you still just mixing it up when you were playing at that age?
Yeah. I think I floated through a few different positions. I'm left-footed, and I was one of the few left-footed kids on our teams growing up. And so I would usually get stuck out on the left, whether it was at left back or a left midfielder position, depending on formation and tactics, stuff like that. But I also spent a good amount of time playing in the midfield. And so I kind of floated all about. I wouldn't say I really locked into a position until later on in high school. And even into college, probably, because I still spent a lot of time floating around to different spots. And even today at the professional level, I've played 3-4 different positions. And that's something that I've kind of prided myself on. But to go back to playing initially with this select team with my older brother, I kind of floated all over the place.
Coming from having a young child right now, that really is good to hear that, like, you are able to apply that today. So it's important. Mm-hmm. So you would say it's important for parents and players to, at a very young age, do not get locked in to one position or one mindset that their kid is going to play left back or center defender or striker or winger of some sort.
Absolutely. Even throughout my career, both in college and now at the professional level, I can't tell you how many guys I've talked to who started out as center backs and now they're center forwards, or vice versa, or, you know, started out as a winger who would never drop back and defend, and now they're high level outside backs. Guys who only played attacking mids, now they've converted to being a defensive midfielder. So, I don't think there's any need for parents and young players to feel like they need to be cemented into a certain position, especially at the younger ages of club. We're talking 8 to 10 years old. As you get a little older into high school, 13, 14, 15, those ages, that's where, you know, as you're more physically developed and stuff like that, I think that's a more appropriate time to start having conversations about, hey, where does your profile most likely fit on the field? But at the same time, kids are still developing, kids are still growing all the way up till they're 18, 20, even 22 years old sometimes. I do think a lot of parents and players probably very prematurely feel like, oh, I need to be locked into a position. And at 8 years old, I should be telling everyone I'm a center back for the rest of my life. I don't think that's the right mentality to have, because the reality is, the players are going to change so much. The teams they're going to be on are going to change. There's going to be different tactics, different positionings, or different positions, different openings. And I think the thing that's going to lend most players to having the most opportunity is being ready to jump in at a moment's notice into a different position. You know, if there's an injury on the field and coach says, hey, I need you to go play right winger, but you tell him, well, coach, sorry, I only know how to play defender. You're going to be left on the bench for the rest of the game. Whereas you could have that opportunity if you have that open mindset to go out and try something new. So I will always encourage young players and parents of young players to really keep an open mind about that and not just settle in at a single position, because that's the best way to get on to the field. It's just being able to be multifaceted and be able to play in different areas.
Okay. So this leads into my next. So you transferred from RAC to at roughly 13, you said, to mm-hmm. in club soccer. Did you play all the positions still, or did you start focusing more on midfield and being a defender, or did you still play possibly a left wing or a right wing, possibly then playing midfield versus defense? Because I know where you play today. It's I mm-hmm. watch I mean, your role is an attacking defender, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
So with that being said, how does that progress from your rec days to academy days now into your mm-hmm. playing?
Yeah, so I think for my first 3 years playing club soccer, because I played my 8th grade, 9th grade, and 10th grade years, and then my junior and senior year is when I played for an academy for the first time, which obviously today they're very, very similar, the structures of them. But the first 3 years when I was playing for a local club team, I was mostly playing in the midfield. I would play sometimes out wide as a wide midfielder, sometimes would play as a holding mid, sometimes would be as an attacking mid. So that kind of changed all over. But at that point, I was primarily just a midfielder. And then when I moved on to play academy, my junior year, which was my first year playing for Real SoCal Academy out of Woodland Hills, California, I spent a lot of time as a left back for the very first time. And part of that was I was playing up a year with a 97s group. So I was one of the younger guys on the team, and we had a very, very talented team, and had a lot of talent in the middle of the field, and we really didn't have anybody else to play left back. So it was kind of just a matter of, hey, we need someone to fill this gap for us. Are you willing to try to play left back and learn that position? Which I knew, you know, based on some of my skill sets, being a midfielder, that I was technical enough. I felt comfortable passing out of the back. I love to be able to get forward, get crosses in the box, combine to go to goal, stuff like that. But I also have enough of that defensive desire to love to get behind the ball and, you know, defend in 1v1 duels and stuff like that. So I kind of just took that and rolled with it my junior year. And then my senior year, I spent some mixed time as either a holding mid or box to box mid, and spending some of my time as left back as well. So it was kind of, again, just the same idea of bouncing around to wherever coach kind of needed. I was willing to take that on as best as I could. And making that move to left back for me as a junior in high school, gave me, or kind of paved the path to play lots and lots of games. Like I said, we didn't have a second guy in that position. And so, for the most part, I was playing full 90s week in and week out, which was great for me, in my development.
So that was your junior year and on in high school.
Mm-hmm.
Did you play your freshman and sophomore year for the high school, or did you play for the club still then?
So I played high school soccer and club soccer for my freshman and sophomore years of high school. So I spent 2 years playing for our varsity team at high school in the off season of club soccer. And I played primarily as an attacking mid, actually, in that system. And then after my sophomore year, that's when I made the decision to play academy. And the way the seasons were structured, it did not allow me to play high school soccer in the off season, because our season ran a little bit longer for the academy system.
So I'm assuming it's much like here, where they struggle with allowing the kids to play both high school and academy soccer levels.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that was the big trade-off for a handful of kids in my area that wanted to play high school soccer, but also wanted to pursue the higher level academy soccer. Was you would have to give up playing for your high school and playing with your friends, which was a difficult decision to make. But, you know, this many years removed, eight years down the road, I feel like it probably was the right decision for me to pursue some higher level soccer instead of staying and playing with the club team I was on and playing for my high school.
So with that being said, you already answered it saying that was the right decision, but do you think, would you be able to be on the path that you're on today if you decided to play for your high school still versus playing for the academy?
Yeah, I think I definitely could have been. You know, I always tell people whenever they ask, like, do I need to be playing for the best team in my area and stuff like that? I always say no. Good players are going to be found out no matter what team you're playing for. Obviously, yes, it helps if you're playing for a high performing team that is, you know, well known in an area. If you're someone who is contributing a lot to that team, that's great. But I think sometimes people get caught up in the hype, if you will, of, oh, I want to go play for this team because they have, you know, this logo that everybody knows and stuff like that. But I'm going to sit on the bench 75% of the time for that team versus, hey, there's this team that not many people know about and that might not be quite as good, but I'm getting to play 90, 95% of the time. And I'm going to keep developing as a player because of that. So it's a little bit of a trade-off, because obviously the training environment is a big part of a player's development. And if you're in an environment that is a low performance, in terms of training and creating habits and pushing each other, that's difficult. But I think if you can find that healthy trade-off of, hey, I still have a very high performing environment in terms of training, but I'm also getting games, that's going to allow you to get seen. And good players are going to be seen no matter what. So to answer your question, yes, I think the trajectory of my career could have gone a little differently. And I say that just because I was scouted to go play at Stanford, where I went to school for 4 years, through my academy. So that opportunity might not have been there for me, but there are so many college opportunities out there that I firmly believe another door would have been open for me to go play somewhere for 4 years. And that door hopefully would have still led to being able to play professional soccer one way or another. So I don't think there's one direct path to professional soccer. There are so many guys who come from so many different pathways and different journeys. So there's no one right way to do it by any means.
Okay. That makes sense. So you said you were scouted with your academy. Does that mean they had a link to Stanford and other colleges for them to come look at players, or did you attend like an ID camp for that to happen, or was it through another method?
Yeah. So my coaching staff at Real SoCal in the academy, they also coached at Cal State Northridge, which is a Division I program near LA in the area. So they had coached against the staff at Stanford, and over, I think it was 3 or 4 years preceding when I came into the academy, they had kind of started to develop a relationship with the coaching staff at Stanford, and they had actually sent a player from the Real SoCal Academy to Stanford for, I think it was 3 consecutive years prior to me, to my graduation year. And so they, when I got to the academy, they knew that I had pretty good grades in school. They thought I might be a good fit based on my profile for the type of player that the Stanford program and Stanford coaches were looking for. And so they kind of just helped get me connected with the Stanford staff, and we got talking from there. They came out to watch some games. We're at showcases that we played that year. And the ball just kind of got rolling from there.
That's pretty cool. So you graduate high school. You said you had pretty good grades, which I know that today in the collegiate world, grades are just as important as your athletic ability. I mean, mm-hmm. I mean, you went to Stanford.
Yeah.
And so you graduated high school, you played through Stanford. I mean, so you started off your freshman year in Stanford. Did you redshirt that year, or did you start playing on the squad, or did you sit more and just subbed in? How did it work for you, your freshman year?
Yeah, so my freshman year, I early on in the year, I was used as a substitute in a number of games, I'd say for probably the first quarter of the season. And in the college game, you're allowed pretty much unlimited subs. Anybody that's on your game day roster can be subbed in. If you're subbed off in the first half, there's no re-entry. If you come off in the second half, you can go back on the field one time. It sounds a lot simpler than it is. It's essentially unlimited subbing in college. And so what that looked like for me early on was getting probably the last 15 minutes of the first half. And then I would come on, play another 15, 20 in the second half. So, you know, maybe getting 30 to 40 minutes a game off the bench early on in the year. And then right around the time that we shifted from our non-conference schedule to our conference schedule, I earned myself a starting spot in the starting 11 and held on to that spot through the rest of the year. So at that point, I kind of shifted from being the guy who was playing 30 minutes to playing 60 to 70 minutes, a lot of games, and still coming out, getting breathers, switching off with my counterpart in that position. But yeah, I was fortunate enough just to have that opportunity come up where coach liked where what he was seeing from me. And I obviously put a lot of effort into learning the system that we played, the principles of our program, what it takes to be a Stanford player, learning all of that on the fly in my first few months of being at Stanford was something that I really had to dedicate myself to, but it paid off, and I was very fortunate to be in a starting role as a freshman. I really, you know, just to talk expectations, I had no idea if I'd be redshirting my freshman year, if I'd be playing at all, if I'd be starting. So, you know, things kind of more or less went best case scenario for me. And I was very fortunate with how that played out my first year.
So taking a step a little bit back. So I'm going back to preseason because I forgot to ask you. So obviously you were physically prepared for it, but I've heard a lot of stories where players will in the preseason will actually get injured and that'll affect the rest of their career through their college days. I keep on hearing these stories and listening to them and or how much more physical it was than their academy play days when they were in high school and such. And then switching to college level where sometimes you have 2-a-day practices and it was more physical and there was more expectation out of you physically demanding than it was prior to this. Did you experience that or did your academy prep you well enough by having the connection to the colleges already for this?
Yeah, I think it was a combination of a lot of things for me, to be honest. My academy, definitely the style that we played in academy was one that just kind of encouraged total football in a lot of senses. It, you know, we were a team that liked to high press, which requires good fitness. We were a team that when we had the ball, we liked to build out, play quote unquote good soccer, tiki taka, whatever you want to call it, when we were under pressure. But we also knew that we could resort to playing a more direct style where sometimes, especially as a midfielder, you're a guy who might be checking for a ball from the back line and they're going to choose to clip a ball forward to break a line. And you're responsible for turning and, you know, making a sprint 15 to 20 yards to be able to collect second balls and stuff like that. So the academy definitely did a good job through their style to teach some of those principles of what it takes to play at the next level. Also, I have to give a ton of credit just to the guys who were already in the program at Stanford. The older guys did a fantastic job. And that was something that our whole program, just the culture of our program, really prided ourselves on, was making sure that we take the incoming class each and every year and making sure that, you know, they're taken under somebody's wing where there's just lots and lots of conversation about, hey, here's our expectations for the year. We don't want you to start the year off and not have any idea what you're getting yourself into. We're going to help you out as much as we can, not to scare you about things, but just so that your expectations realistically are going to be such that you're going to be able to succeed here. And there's just a really big culture of guys wanting to see each other succeed at Stanford, which was super helpful. So I mean, we got so much insight from guys before we even arrived for our first day of preseason, just in terms of what we should expect from our coaching staff, fitness levels. Here's where you should be on our team's fitness test. Here's some of the hard parts that I've struggled with personally. Here's some of the highs of being in the program, all those different things that led to a lot of success, I think, for me. All that to say, though, when you actually jump in and play your first collegiate game. I remember I ran around for about 5 minutes and the ball went out of bounds and I realized I could hardly breathe because the game was moving that fast. So no matter how well prepared you are, there is still that adjustment of players are physically more dominant at the collegiate level. They're able to cover more ground. They're technically better than they are at the academy level. And so just the overall speed of play is definitely higher at the collegiate level. And so that's in and of itself, another part that you have to adapt to is not just coming in and saying, hey, like I did all this fitness work in the preseason just to come and fit. You have to actually learn how to adapt to game situations and use your fitness to succeed, but also use your head as much as you can and be thoughtful about what you're doing in order to maximize your performance.
Okay. That's a lot.
Yes, I know. I ramble a lot. I apologize for that.
Don't apologize. I appreciate that because I've listened to a lot of stories of players coming in, and that's the biggest challenge is the next step for you is that, like they say, that a lot of colleges will have players that are from abroad coming and playing, and they're 6 years older than them, and they're 18 years old coming into the collegiate world, and they're playing against someone that's 24, 25 years that have played since they've been 16 years old at an amateur, and that plays an effect onto the dynamics of the team. I don't know if you guys experienced that at your college, but I listen to a lot of stories, and that's one thing that's, I think it's important for parents and players to understand is that it's a completely different mindset and game that you're playing now that you're at a collegiate level playing. And you're coming in at 18 and already starting midway through, so to speak, or three quarters way through your freshman year. So,
right. Yeah, there is definitely that change of you kind of go from playing with boys to playing with men very quickly. And obviously at the academy level, and there are high schoolers who are 17 years old and, you know, have the physique and the physical capabilities of a full grown man. But when you get to the collegiate level, you know, even when you're playing against guys that are only 2 years above you, you know, 20, 21 years old, there's just, they're that much more developed, you know, physically. And so the game moves that much quicker. It's that much more physical. And so I think no matter how much you are prepared for that, how much fitness work you do, how much lifting you do prior to coming in, every freshman in some capacity probably will have some sort of that struggle of just realizing like, okay, I've gone from playing with boys to playing with men now. And it's all about how well can you adapt on the fly with that? And how fast can you learn how to find just those 1% advantages that you can give yourself in every game.
Right. So I'm going to kind of take a small pivot backwards and I forgot this. Uh-huh. So your freshman year, soccer is, we'll call it football since we're actually on a soccer podcast. Football was your freshman year, I'm assuming. Now, from your, let's say, ninth grade to your senior year, how much did you give up until this point in your life to focus on football?
Yeah, I would say a decent amount. By no means did I have to give up everything. I still felt that I was able to have a very well-balanced life where, you know, my priorities of family relationships and friendships and pursuing hobbies and church, those things were still big priorities for me in life. It's not that soccer took over 100% of my life. That said, especially my junior and senior year, when I was playing for the academy, it was about an hour drive to where we trained. So I was giving up pretty much 3 nights a week, would have to be leaving around 5 o'clock, I believe it was, and I wouldn't be getting home until 10 o'clock. And so my schedule was right when I got home from school in the afternoons. It was sit down, finish up my homework as quickly as I could. If I wasn't able to get it done, I'd be taking it in the car with me to do that on the way to training. And if it still wasn't done by the time we got to training, then I'd come home and keep working into the late hours of the night if that's what it required. So it took a lot of discipline, more than anything, and really taught me the skills of time management. But like I said, I do feel like I was able to really balance a lot of my life because, as I've said, I absolutely love the game. But the game is the most enjoyable for me when I feel like my life is balanced, when I have time for my family, when I have time for my friends, relationships, you know, pursuing the Lord and my faith and stuff like that. Those are really key things that, when life is balanced like that for me and soccer isn't the only thing that's going on in my life, that's where I feel like I enjoy the game the most.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Moving into your freshman year, you started your sophomore year. I'm assuming you were a starter, full-time starter at this point in time.
For my sophomore year?
Yes.
So I actually jumped back and forth my sophomore year with the same guy who I had beaten out the year prior. We kind of teetered back and forth. He would start a few games. I would start a few games. I think he ended up starting a majority of the games in the position that we were playing, which was a wide midfielder in a 4-4-2 system. So it was actually kind of a unique situation going from being primarily a starter my freshman year to being a guy who came off the bench a little bit more my sophomore year. It was a little bit of a strange dynamic because obviously most people feel like once you win a spot, it's yours. But that was, you know, one of the great things about our program was we didn't just have 11 guys who started and then there's a huge drop off. We had a lot of guys on the bench who would come in as substitutes to games that easily could be starters at our program or other programs around the country. And so we had a really high performing competitive environment where it didn't matter if you were a senior, if you were a fifth year senior, nothing was guaranteed. Our coach wanted to see who was the best 11 at the time. And that's who he was going to put on the field.
The starting 11. So from week to week, it would change, or would it be more set schedule for so many games you would be the starting 11, or would you actually fight for each week for your position?
Yeah, I'd say for the most part, our coach did like to have a consistent starting 11, but that's not to say that if someone was really in form or someone was really out of form, that he'd make changes. So I don't know. It would be interesting probably to go back and see throughout a season, how many times was it the same exact starting 11? Cause I'd say a lot of games, it would be maybe just one or two positions would be, you know, guys would swap out or something like that based on who was in form. So he definitely did like keeping very similar starting lineups, but that's not to say that it wouldn't change at all.
Gotcha. That was your sophomore year. So you're moving into your junior year. I know when you were a senior, you were the captain of the squad. Mm-hmm. Was that started in your junior year or was that only your senior year?
That was only my senior year. Yeah, I was one of three co-captains that our coach had named as a senior.
So it always is, I'm assuming it's normally a senior then?
Yes, it most of the time is. We'll have juniors. Sometimes it really just depends on the group, on the personalities, and who the coaching staff and players even kind of felt would be the best fit for that position.
So your junior, let's go back to your junior here. So your junior, did you jockey with the same player or the new players come in? I have no clue what level or what age this player was in
his league. Yeah. So the guy that I jockeyed back and forth with for that spot, he finished his time at Stanford after my sophomore year. So he was 2 years above me. He actually scored the game winning goal in the 2017 national championship in overtime for our team, which was awesome. One of the best experiences that I've been a part of. But anyways, he moved on, and graduated after that year. And so, my junior and my senior year, I started every single game that, and I think I was healthy and eligible. Yeah, I played in every game possible. Thankfully did not have to miss any games due to injury or suspension, anything like that. So I was a consistent starter for us my last 2 years.
Okay. And so the national team championship was your sophomore and your senior year, if I'm remembering right.
So we won national championships my first 2 years in 2016 and 2017. And that was coming off the heels of our program's first national championship in 2015. So we did a three-peat. I was a part of the second and third one. And then my senior year in 2019, we got back to the Final Four, but lost in the semifinal.
Okay. I don't have a great memory. I don't have my book in front of me with all my notes. So,
No problem.
So you played your junior and senior year. Did you plan on going pro at this point in time? Or were you looking at continuing your college education or a job, like a quote normal job versus a pro athlete?
Yeah, I was, I think I kind of was on the fence at that point, only because I had no idea as a junior and even into my senior year, if there would be professional opportunity waiting once I graduated. The beauty of Stanford, obviously, is that you're set up with one of the best degrees in the world, pretty much. And so I knew, yes, I didn't want to be done playing after college. And I really wanted to pursue whatever opportunities came about and whatever opportunities I could find. But I was also at a point where I told myself, hey, if I try this for a little bit and it's not quite working out, and, you know, if I'm not able to secure a contract, or if it doesn't seem like logistically it's going to make sense for me to pursue professional soccer, then, you know, I have a great bachelor's degree under my belt, and we can see, do I want to pursue some more school? Do I want to try to, you know, find a full-time job? Where do I want to go from there? So that's the beauty of coming out of Stanford, is I feel like it left coming out, and as I was graduating, just had so many options of what I could pursue. And I felt very confident about each one of them that, hey, if I want to play soccer, I can go do that. And whenever, you know, if it does work out to play soccer, whenever I'm done, I'm going to have that, that cushion, if you will, of my Stanford degree. That's something that I'm going to have for the rest of my life. And so I can afford to really kind of go all in playing soccer for the next few years. And then hopefully I can put that Stanford degree to work, whenever the time comes to hang my boots up.
Gotcha. So did you, looking back through your college years, did you feel like you gave up stuff in the pursuit of soccer, of the playing the game, or did you feel like you were able to truly experience still the college experience?
Yeah. I mean, I think for any athlete at the collegiate and professional level, they're going to answer yes. They would have to give up something in order to be able to pursue their sport at the highest level. I finished my time at Stanford in 3 1/4 years. So I was done with school by the time I finished my senior season in the fall. And so that came with some extra sacrifices of having to do some summer classes to get ahead. I had a few quarters at school that I was really stacked up, very, very full on my units and my classes in order to be able to finish early. And I really, really wanted to be done with my degree before leaving school to pursue playing professionally. So there definitely were some opportunities that I would say I probably missed out on because I was a little more focused on finishing my schooling and, you know, trying to perform and improve in the best way possible to be at my best on the field. But at the same time, like I had kind of mentioned when I was in high school with some of those sacrifices that came from playing academy soccer, I still felt that I was able to find good balance within all that. I got to be part of Fellowship of Christian Athletes, FCA as it's more commonly known, on campus. And I think it was my junior year, got to be a co-president of our club and was on the leadership team for that. So that fostered a lot of relationships and something else that I was passionate about outside of soccer and outside of school. So yes, I mean, I probably didn't get to be quite as social as some college kids might hope for during their 4 years at school. But the reality is I had my very, very close-knit group of friends within my team, and some other close friends at school who I felt like, hey, we have really good understandings of what we want in life and what we want from our time at Stanford. And so we're okay with sacrificing some of the social aspect because we're driven in the same ways and we can still enjoy hanging out and being together without feeling like we're really missing out on a whole lot. So I personally don't feel like I walked away from college with these regrets of, oh, I missed out on so much. You know, if I had to go back and do it again, I think I'd do it very, very similarly because I was able to still pursue a lot of things that I was passionate about in college. And that's everything I could have hoped for and more when I arrived there as an 18-year-old.
Right. I mean, your eyes are just opening up to the world because you're becoming a quote, an adult. So you moved into your senior year, graduated. Now you said I didn't realize this. You graduated early. Is this so you could make the draft for the MLS?
Yes. I didn't want to have to worry about finishing up X amount of classes. So I was done with the exception of one class, which I had to take online during the spring of 2020 after I had been drafted. But besides that one class, I had everything else done where I didn't have to worry about going back to school or doing online classes full time. So I was essentially able to jump into being a full time pro right away.
So 2020, we have COVID here in the United States, around the world, not just in the United States, but I feel like here in Texas, it kind of just lasted for 8 months. And you were drafted to the FC Dallas, if I'm remembering right, but I don't remember what number you are now. I'm drawing a blank. You were drafted to the in the super draft to FC Dallas. Mm-hmm. Now, was that, and this is where my lack of understanding. So is it automatically going down and playing for North Texas Soccer, or would you automatically be able to play for Team One?
So for most people in a draft, if you get drafted, that only guarantees that you have the right to come in and essentially get a trial with the first team. There are a very select few, usually I want to say 5 to maybe 8 players in every draft who are selected for Generation Adidas, which are for underclassmen, non-seniors who are going to leave school early. They have guaranteed first team contracts. There's also a small handful of senior contracts for players that have fulfilled their full have run out of eligibility pretty much at the collegiate level. They can also sign contracts before the draft that are saying, hey, wherever I get drafted, I'm going to be signed with the first team. But those are very, very few. I want to say maybe just 2 or 3 of those. So essentially what you're looking at is the top 10 players in the draft are just about guaranteed a first team contract. Anything beyond that is what I had just said, that you're essentially given a trial to come in with the first team during preseason and train. And if you perform well, you might get signed. If you don't, maybe there's a second team opportunity, but you're also not even guaranteed a second team contract at that point. You're just guaranteed to get a look from the club, and a handful of times they'll see a player and say, hey, no thanks, but we appreciate your time. And then they're left at the end of, 2 weeks, 4 weeks, 6 weeks, whatever it is, with an MLS team, they're kind of left to go scramble and find a new team. So I feel very lucky that I was able to land with the second team at North Texas. And that just kind of helped springboard the beginning of my career as a pro.
I know that we've talked, and when I've asked you about it. So in the spring, for baseball terms, spring training, so big preseason, you practice with Team One, then regular season. Was that to give you a chance to see if you will make roster for Team One, or is that just because of you were the player that you were and they thought you might have a chance? I don't know how to phrase this. Or is it just to bring players to have more experience with?
Yeah. Yeah. I would say early on in the first few weeks of preseason, it's a genuine trial for anybody who gets drafted. It doesn't matter if you're the last pick in the last round or if you're, you know, the first pick, the club's first choice. Maybe they have a late first round pick and they pick you. It's essentially everyone's thrown into the same case where for anybody not under contract, you're coming in and they give you a chance to prove yourself, to see if you're worthy of earning one of the 30 contracts that a club has to offer. Obviously with some players, you can tell right away, hey, maybe they're not quite at the level, or hey, maybe they're a guaranteed lock after a week. It varies for every player. Some guys will sign a first team contract a week into preseason. Some of them have to go 6 weeks into preseason before they actually sign a contract. So it's different for every player, but yes, it is a guaranteed trial pretty much for any player that gets invited into preseason.
So you went through your preseason and you were fortunate enough to land with Team 2, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And you started with Team 2. And did you start there as a starter also, or did you work your way up into that position with the coach that you had there?
I did. So COVID, you know, threw a bit of a wrench into things. I think we were about 2 weeks away from our first game of the year when things shut down for the very first time, and we didn't get back to play our first game until the end of July, four and a half months later. So I ended up starting all but one game, I believe it was, my first year. And that was something where, kind of similar to some of my other experiences, we just did not have another left back on the roster. And so I was kind of our first and only choice at that point, which just kind of gave me a lot of opportunity to be in that spot, and got to learn and grow a lot in that first year. And so, yeah, throughout my second year, was a very consistent starter, started probably 90% of our game, played probably close to 90% of minutes, throughout the year. So it was a very fortunate situation I was in, because I know a lot of places guys might land even with the second team, but even there, they're still struggling to get on the field. So I feel very lucky that, I was able to get as much involvement as I got, and it helped me grow tremendously as a player during those 2 years.
So in the time of COVID, and I know that a lot of sports had a lot of issues with players and staying in shape, and how did that work for you guys? I mean, I have not heard too much of it, how the clubs and here in the United States handled it, but in Europe, you read about it because that's everything's all over there. But here in the States, they don't talk about how the clubs handled the fitness side for the players, because you guys weren't allowed to practice as teams and practice together. So how did you guys actually get through that 4 month kind of a drought of sports for you guys as a team?
It was very difficult. I can't really sugarcoat that at all, especially for someone who is a brand new pro. You don't know what a professional preseason and professional season even looks like as it is. And then all of a sudden you have essentially a 4 month break from where you were at. So I think it was about 2 months for us that we were not even allowed to be at the facilities doing any kind of training. So we would be given fitness packets, training packets, stuff like that, that we could try to go out and do just at local parks, or if you could even just find some area to go for a run, if you had a ball and, you know, could go hit a ball against a wall, stuff like that, just to be able to do some technical training. But also the most important thing at that point is just to try to maintain your fitness. Especially because we didn't know if it was going to be a 2 week break, a month long break, 4 months, you know? So week by week, we were just trying to say, or to see if we could stay as fit as possible so that we could hit the ground running once we got the green light to return. Now, after about that 2 month period, I think it was probably early June, I think, is when we got to return for the first time to the facilities. And at that point we were limited to only individual training. So we, between our two practice fields, would break the team up into half. So we would have half the group come at like 9 a.m., half the group come at 11 a.m. And we would split the field into four quadrants, and you were only allowed in your quadrant. And there was no ability to pass balls between quadrants. You pretty much had your two soccer balls, a set of cones, a goal, stuff like that. And that was only yours, because they were very, very strict, obviously, early on about just making sure there was no possible way that anything could spread or anything like that. So we were confined to being able to see each other at least and be at the same place. But obviously you can only get so much training in when you can pretty much dribble a soccer ball through cones and stuff like that, and maybe hit a ball off a rebounder and do some shooting, but that's about it. So we were in that protocol for, I want to say, 3 to 4 weeks. And then we finally got the green light to start having training sessions again with the full team. And so at that point, I think we had about weeks probably between getting the green light to have full team training and our very first game at the end of July.
In your first season, so that, do you think that played effect on how you guys all played together, or were majority of the squad already together before you joined?
Yeah, so a decent amount of the squad was already together. And something that's very unique to FC Dallas is their pipeline of academy players into the second team, into the first team. And so we had probably close to half of our team were guys who had come up through the academy system at FC Dallas. And so they already had a very good understanding of each other and also the style that we wanted to play at North Texas SC. And then some of the other guys that had been around were in their second year with the club in 2020. And so they already had a good understanding as well. So there weren't too many new pieces where it felt like we had to completely restart once we returned from COVID lockdown. I think we had established enough as a group of kind of a culture and identity that it wasn't terribly difficult to pick up where we left off.
Do you think by the end of the season, I don't remember where you guys placed at the end of the season, but do you guys think you guys would have done better or worse if you guys had more time to play together? I know that's kind of weird to say you're going to do worse. Mm-hmm. The more time you spend, things don't always pan out as well.
Yeah. I would like to think we would have done better if we had a little bit more time, and not even necessarily time before the season. I think our season got cut down from 28 games to 16. And we actually finished in third, if I'm not mistaken, by, I want to say it was either 1 or 2 points. And the way they did it in 2020 was only the first and second place team would play in a final instead of having a playoff system with a quarterfinal, semifinal, and final. So we narrowly missed out on making the final. But I say that I think we would have done better if we had a little bit more time, only because it took us probably the first 8 games of the season, which is already the halfway point, to kind of find and hit our stride. And I think it was the last 6 games we went for 5 wins and a draw, I believe, or maybe 4 wins and 2 draws. We really started to pick it up there and find the right rhythm as a team. So I think our coaching staff and a lot of players alike would both feel like if we had one more game or even 2 more games, that could have made the difference, because we were just somehow finding a way week in and week out for the last month and a half of the season to get a result every time. And it's such narrow margins, obviously, at this level. You know, when you drop 2 points late in a game from conceding a goal or something like that, that can end up being the difference in your season. So we had a very successful year. And, you know, if we had the format of quarterfinal, semifinal, and final, we would have been in the postseason, and we feel like we could have had a good shot, but we just narrowly missed out on being involved in that final.
It's crazy. And your second season with North Texas Soccer Club, you guys finished, I wish I had my notebook with me. I actually wrote this all down.
We finished sixth. Yeah, my second year, which we were the last team to get into the playoffs. Again, things were very tight in the table. I want to say in our last game of the year, we conceded a penalty in stoppage time, which took us from a win down to a tie. And that those 2 points that we dropped there, we were in fourth place, and I think we dropped to sixth, if I remember correctly, which would have meant we would have had a home game for our first playoff. Instead, we had to go on the road to play the third seeded team. And ended up losing that game in overtime.
Crazy. Now you move into your third season. This is where we met you. My family met you. And we watched you play and play quite a bit. And then as your season went on, things, the transition changed, new club, new coach and other factors. I don't know, and you don't need to share, but your time dwindled. And the thing that stuck with me the most is that if you aren't playing, you said, what was that, the quote you gave me? If you aren't getting minutes, you'll be forgotten in 6 months. Do you still feel that way? Or do you feel like if you keep up your talent level, you still have a fighting chance since you've moved to Greenville now and playing with Greenville Triumph? Or do you think that philosophy still holds true for football here in the United States?
Yeah, I think it's similar to what I had said earlier in our talk about good players are going to be found no matter what. But that said, there is the counter side of that, that it can be very, very difficult. Even if you are a great player, if you're not getting minutes and you're not able to be seen consistently by other sets of eyes from scouts and coaches from other clubs, whenever your time does come to finish at one club, it can be very difficult to kind of stay relevant with other clubs. The world of soccer, and especially in professional soccer, I feel like is such a small world where so many coaches have connections here or there, and you know, different players know different players at other clubs and stuff like that. So it feels like a pretty small network where if you kind of fall out and you're on the outside looking in at that network, it can be kind of difficult to break back in, where you might go from, you know, playing a lot at one club. And then in my case, not playing a whole lot my third year, all of a sudden, you know, thankfully things worked out very well for me to come to Greenville, and I was thrust into a starting position right away due to some injuries here. But if that weren't the case, I very well at the end of this year could have been done with my contract at North Texas. And, you know, I could have been going on trial week in and week out in January and February with some other clubs trying to find a new home. And that very well still could be the case for next year. If I don't end up sticking in Greenville, that's, you know, part of the adventure of being a pro is a lot of times you're on 1 year guaranteed deals and you don't know from year to year where you're going to be. So that's the harsh reality of it is for some guys, you might just get 1 year. And then if you can't find a place to land for a second year, then like I'm saying, it's hard to jump back in sometimes just because clubs are constantly looking for, okay, who has the most promise, the most potential, where's this player ceiling at, you know? And so even for players like myself, who I'm 24 years old right now, I still feel like I'm very much a young pro. The reality is the game is getting younger and younger, and teams are going to look more for 16-year-olds, 17-year-olds, 18-year-olds who have a little bit more promise and a little bit higher of a ceiling than someone who's 24 or 26. So that's a bit of the harsh reality. But like I said, I was very fortunate that things worked out to come to Greenville, and I've got to get playing again and get some more minutes under my belt. And I feel like that's going to set me up very well for whatever comes next.
What advice would you give a 13-year-old you right today on moving forward?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is that it doesn't matter how quickly you're moving forward or what the rate is or where you think you're going to be a year from now, 5 years from now. The only thing that really matters today is, are you moving forward or are you making the right effort to move forward? Because the reality is, for a 13-year-old me, I had no idea at 13 years old that I would be playing professionally. I obviously aspired to it, and it was one of my goals. But when I was 13 years old, there was nothing that I could do on any given day at 13 that would automatically guarantee me getting to where I am today. I'm at the spot I'm at today because of an accumulation of 1% efforts every single day, every time I'm on the field, to be able to improve just a little bit. And obviously, you know, it ebbs and flows as a player. You have days that you're feeling great. You have days you don't feel great. Your confidence can be up. It can shoot right down. So I think the biggest piece of advice I would have is just, you need to be moving forward and doing the right actions, because you might not see it in a 1 day or a 1 week span, but over the course of 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, you're going to start to see the benefits of all that hard work. And just the habits that you build become so, so important. You know, I'm someone who has always been very, very driven. Even when I was a kid and in grade school, when it came to spelling tests and stuff like that, I was heartbroken anytime I wouldn't get a perfect score and stuff like that. And so I've always been someone who really loves giving my absolute best. And if I feel like I'm not giving my best, then I feel like that's a day that I've let get away from me. And so in all aspects of life, not just in soccer, I always want to be striving to be building the right habits and to be giving my 100%, whatever that looks like.
That's good to hear. I really like that you said 100%, because I feel like in our culture, we always hear give 110%. And I read a quote recently talking about, you can't give 110%. And why are we even saying it? We need to give 100%, 100% of the time. Mm-hmm. And into a soccer podcast recently, he said, I'll take a player that gives me 83% consistency 100% of the time than a player that will give me 100% consistency 25% of the time. And I feel like,
right.
I feel like that was such a great analogy, because it really pointed out that the imperfect player is really sometimes the best player on the field, because they're giving it your all. And that's, mm-hmm. you know, summarizing what you just said and putting it in terms.
yes, exactly. No, it's well said.
Different terms. And now, how have you enjoyed, I'll wrap this up here pretty quickly, because I know time is sensitive for everyone. Yeah.
And I want to add one more thing really quick, if that's all right.
No,
I think it's similar to what you were just saying about the 83% consistency 100% of the time. I've been told before to give 100% of whatever you have. That means, like, for example, right now at this point in the season, we're 9 months in, essentially. We started back in January. Everybody in our locker room right now is feeling less than 100%. A lot of guys are nursing injuries, a lot of wear and tear on the body, stuff like that. And so guys might only be, their optimum right now might only be 85% of their full capacity, just because of the nature of the way the season goes. But what we ask from each other in our locker room, and what a lot of pros expect from themselves, is 100% of whatever you have. If you're only at 85%, but you give me 100% of that, that's perfect. That's all I can ask for. Versus like what you had said, if you have 100% to give, but you're only giving it 25%, what's the point in that? You're not going to see true growth and true expansion of your skills. So whatever you have, you know, you don't need to compare yourself to others. You just need to focus on giving 100% of whatever you have. And that's going to go a very, very long way, that consistency of constantly giving 100%.
You've shared that message quite a few times with Landon. I've always. Mm-hmm. Now, I have two more questions for you, and then I'll wrap this up for you. So we met you through coaching. You reached out to my wife, and that's where our paths have crossed. Mm-hmm. I know that we've had conversations about coaching and how much you enjoy it. Do you see that as something you'll continue doing for fun? Because I feel like you do, anything you do that you love is really fun. It's not really a job. And you still see yourself doing that on the moments that you have time for it, or even in the future? Or do you think when, in let's say 10 years from now, you hang your boots up and you're done, you will still want, you'll still have that drive to help others be better athletes through soccer or whatever it may be at the time?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've learned that I really do enjoy coaching, and the best part about it for me is that I get to help the next generation, the next wave of players that are coming through. I was very, very fortunate as a young kid to have some incredible coaches that not only taught me the fundamentals of the game, but also taught me a lot just about life in general. You know, what a lot of the principles of what it takes to be a high level soccer player translate to life in terms of your discipline, your work rate, responsibility, humility, so many different key aspects of who I am today. I think we're kind of formed by some of those coaches that I had at a very young age who taught me a lot about the game. And so as a coach for me now, getting to work, especially one-on-one with kids, is awesome, just to see kids when they're struggling, how do they react to that? When they're doing well, how do they react? And ultimately just trying to pass along some of those little nuggets of wisdom, if you will, that I've been fortunate enough to have passed down to me. I want to keep passing that on, because I don't think you can ever have enough of that in the world. There's never going to be enough hard work, enough humility to go around where people are going to get tired of it. So if I can have any impact on the kids I'm working with and be able to share my passion for the game in a way that helps them to love the game as they continue to grow up and grow into the young man or young woman that they're going to be someday, that's ultimately what I love. It doesn't matter as much to me if they go on to be a professional soccer player. If that's what they aspire to be, great. I would love to be a part of helping them reach that goal. But more than anything, I just want to help them enjoy the game and teach them some of those principles that have helped me be so successful. I think my dad is probably one of the biggest influences. I honestly might answer this with a few different people, if that's all right, because I can't tab it down just to one people. I've had so many different people that have positively impacted my life and my career. So my dad is one of the ones who has just unconditionally supported me in whatever I've done. Even now as a pro, I don't feel the pressure to perform a certain way. I hear a lot from my dad and both my parents, honestly, that they want me to do something that's going to make me happy and that I enjoy doing. And so there's never the expectation that I need to perform a certain way. My dad just taught me a lot about, life in general as a young kid and how the game of soccer could translate into life. I've also learned a lot from my three brothers. I am the second of four boys, so I have one older brother, two younger brothers. And growing up together, we're all roughly 2 years apart from each other. So we all kind of got to go through phases of life more or less throughout the same periods. And so I've learned a ton from them, and they've just taught me so much about hard work, dedication, you know, kind of that 1% idea that I had touched on earlier of, I've seen from all of them, they, you know, what they've accomplished in their lives so far has been a result of them having very similar mindsets to myself, and that they want to give whatever they're going to do in life, they want to give it 100% and go at it wholeheartedly. And so I'm sure there's a laundry list of other coaches, mentors, stuff like that I could list, but you know, you learn so much from your family as a kid growing up, and that really is a big part in shaping who you are as an adult. And so between both my parents, honestly, but especially my dad, and then my three brothers, I've learned more than I could have ever imagined from from all of them.
That's awesome. It's amazing where people draw their influence from. I mean, if you ask a kid today, they'll say a professional player, but as we grow up, we all look back and it's normally the ones that are the closest to us that we draw the most influence.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I just want to say thank you for your time and wish you the best of luck this weekend, and we'll be sitting down watching.
All right. Thank you so much for having me. This was a blast.
Derek gave some great insight into the 1% that we have to find in our daily struggle. I hope you can pass on the message that players need to be doing great in every aspect of their game, from schoolwork to the pitch. I hope to catch you on the next episode of Chat by the Pitch. This is Ian Babcock.